Good afternoon. I will call to order this remote meeting of the House Commerce Committee and ask Mr. Dockendorf to please take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Present.
Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Present.
Representative Barr.
Here.
Representative Carlson.
I'm here.
Representative Davney.
Davney present.
Representative Elkins.
Elkins present.
Representative Haley.
Lee present.
Representative Kegel.
Present.
Representative Lee, was that?
Lee present, sorry.
No, you're good, thank you. Representative Lilly and Listegard are excused. Representative Lucero.
Lucero here.
Representative Olson.
Here.
Representative Farr.
Farr here.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Tice.
Tice present.
Thank you.
We do have a quorum. The first item on our agenda is approval of our minutes from March 29th, 2022. Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon, do you have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move approval of yesterday's minutes, the 29th.
Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon moves approval of our minutes from March 29th, 2022. Any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes from March 29th, 2022 are adopted. Members, we have a few bills on our calendar today. The first two relate to the very serious problem of increasing auto theft and catalytic converter theft in Minnesota. These are, you know, subjects that you might be surprised are in the Commerce Committee, but of course, we do have the auto theft prevention program that is housed within the Department of Commerce. And so both of these bills have a strong relation to that program in one way or another. So we will start with House File 4205. Representative Cotiza Watoon, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would move House File 4205 to be before the committee for consideration.
Wonderful. And why don't you describe your bill as it exists now? I have an amendment that I'll offer in a minute, but perhaps first we can have you describe your bill.
Yes.
Representative Cotiza Watoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, just back in January, a few miles outside of Eden Prairie, a mother was picking her child up at preschool. When she opened the door to her vehicle, just like every other day, a man leapt out and demanded her car keys. The offender's vehicle was later recovered in St. Louis Park and confirmed to have been stolen in another carjacking in Richfield earlier that same day. Members, this could have been me picking up one of my children. Across the country and across the state, we have seen an alarming increase in crime. As a suburban mom and a legislator, I've worked in partnership with Representative Edelson and other suburban legislators to create and expand legislation to support and fund law enforcement and give peace officers the tools they need to help keep us safe. House File 4205 is an appropriations bill for the Auto Theft Prevention Program. The Department of Commerce has partnered with local law enforcement, county prosecutors, and community organizations since 2004 in a partnership to stop auto theft in its tracks. Since 2009, the Fraud Prevention Bureau has managed the Auto Theft Prevention Program. House File 4205, along with House File 2845, provide additional funding to allow peace officers to focus on and stem the tide in increased auto thefts, as well as carjackings and financial crimes. Mr. Chair, we can discuss your amendment now and then continue on to testifiers.
Wonderful. I will move the A3 amendment. This amendment adds a couple other appropriations to Representative Cotiza Watoon's bill after having some conversations with law enforcement professionals about specific needs that could be met by the Commerce Department and the Auto Theft Prevention Fund. In particular, the amendment would appropriate $2 million to the Department of Commerce, the Auto Theft Prevention Program, to establish an equipment library so that the department could offer resources that are perhaps too expensive, pieces of equipment that are perhaps too expensive to suburban and smaller communities in greater Minnesota for use in combating auto theft. A great example would be Bait car. So the city of Minneapolis and city of St. Paul both have used bait cars routinely. As a prosecutor, I have seen cases like this. Essentially, police put a vehicle out in a high theft area experiencing a high level of automobile theft crime, and the vehicle is equipped with cameras and GPS monitoring devices, and if and when it is stolen, they're able to apprehend the thief rather easily, being able to track the person down. Now, a bait car is something that's within the means of the city of Minneapolis, city of St. Paul, but a smaller suburb or a greater Minnesota city might not be able to afford something like that. And if they were experiencing a high level of automobile theft in a particular area and had wanted to use a bait car for a limited period of time, it would make sense for them to be able to borrow one for a short period of time from the Department of Commerce. The second appropriation is $500,000 to pay overtime expenses. Again, the department has, through the automobile theft program, and I think there's a little bit of, if members want detail on how this exactly works, I think we have someone from the department here who can explain it, but has used some of the funding to pay overtime for departments that are investigating or prosecuting automobile theft. And that, given the staffing shortages that we're experiencing in law enforcement these days, that's a very important tool in their arsenal. And so we want to provide them some extra funds to achieve that. So that's the A3 amendment, and I'm offering it. And is there any discussion to the A3 amendment? Representative Katiza Witun, it's your bill. I don't know if you want to express an opinion on the A3.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. Members, I would accept the A3 amendment as a friendly amendment. I appreciate Chair Stevenson's collaboration and due diligence, and I think it makes a lot of sense after hearing back from the department and law enforcement to increase the funding levels in this, this proposal.
Wonderful. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
The motion prevails and the A3 is adopted. Any further comments before we go to testifiers, Representative Katiza Witun?
Nope. I would just thank Sheriff Fletcher for his support and ask that he share his experience with all of us.
Well, Sheriff Fletcher, the floor is yours. You are muted, sir.
Mr. Chair, Representative, and members of the committee, thank you so much for your support of these initiatives in the Department of Commerce. They've been a huge help to law enforcement in the past 2 years. Let me just say that joyriding of 10 years ago is no longer the primary reason that people take cars. People are stealing cars to commit other offenses. Nearly all of our carjackings involve suspects coming there in a stolen car. They're involved in burglaries, credit card fraud as well. On a regular basis here in Ramsey County, we have stolen cars that are used in drive-by shootings. So this is a critical time for us to be able to focus on the stolen vehicles. And the last 6 months, thanks to your Department of Commerce grants, we've arrested 34 adults, 48 juveniles, recovered over 200 cars. And of those 48 individuals, we've recovered 12 guns in those cars as well. And many of those we know were a part and parcel of the carjackings as well. So this is a critical tool, and it's important to think of these stolen cars as tools of the trade. They're using them to commit several other types of crimes. And no longer is it young people just trying to get from point A to point B. Yesterday we had a carjacking, stolen car that in Minneapolis. It took an hour for the Minneapolis Police Department to get to the actual call because they're so short-staffed. And these initiatives allow us to activate immediately. And so actually the owner called us and it was pinging in Ramsey County, and we were able to activate our auto theft team supported by your grant and recover the car and gain evidence in other robberies as well. So it's a critical tool to allow us to focus on a trend that is involved in violence, as well as the economic impact that it has on people whose cars are stolen, people that can't go to work and their insurance may not pay for some of the damage. So thank you for your efforts. We certainly support the A3 amendment as well, and I'll be glad to stand for any questions.
Thank you. Discussion to the bill. Members, any discussion to the bill? Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question, I guess I would have several for the bill author or for the sheriff himself. I guess the first question would be for the sheriff. Thank you, by the way, Sheriff Fletcher. I know we have never met before, but I've seen you on social media and I'm familiar with the work that you're performing. So thank you so much for your service and your dedication to Ramsey County.
Thank you.
In Minnesota. In the testimony you just gave, you had mentioned that the criminal activity in the last 2 years, is there anything? So one of the things that I do, since we've not met before, I do IT, IT security specifically. But in IT, information technology, when I receive calls for service, when there's a problem, whether it be a print problem, a server problem, computer problem, I try to perform root cause analysis to treat the cause of what's happening, not treat symptoms. And so while I do appreciate the efforts here, I view this bill largely as treating a symptom when I think we need to retreat and go after the root cause analysis if we can identify it. In your experience, you had mentioned 2 years as your testimony. Is there anything in the last 2 years that might have caused the increase that you could think of?
Well, I'd love to answer that question. First, on the root causes, one of the grants that we have from the Department of Commerce requires a prevention and intervention program. So what we've actually done is we have a diversion program for first-time offenders, and we bring the parents in and we identify those individuals to try to get them on the right track without using the justice system. So I'm in 100% agreement with you. Just because the money goes to law enforcement doesn't mean that your Commerce Department isn't insisting on the three-pronged approach of prevention, intervention, and suppression. So that is happening. I'm proud of what we're doing, and we've had dozens of mothers in here saying, "Hey, I need help with my son. The system isn't working." Or in some cases, they say, "Hey, my son needs drug treatment." So we're working on the front end, and I would say we have a much larger number of 13, 14, 15-year-olds involved in this crime than we've ever seen before. And that's the driving factor that we need to get these kids out of this business before it becomes a habit. Now, the violence and carjackings really began in July, August of 19. So we're looking at a 2.5-year trend. Of course, it's escalated here in the last 2 years. And you're asking me to be able to determine what caused that. I am an expert on juvenile crime. I spent many years as a juvenile commander. I don't have an answer to why we're seeing large numbers. I wish I did. I could throw out anecdotal information as to why these kids are struggling. Ultimately, of course, the pandemic and had something to do with it. But they're looking at trends. They watch things that happen nationwide. They're learning from the East and West Coast. What happens there eventually comes here. There's of course, parenting issues. There's poverty issues. I would say, the biggest prevention thing that kids need is a significant role model that they perceive as concerned for their needs and values. And a lot of these kids have single parents that are working their butts off to stay ahead financially. So we're trying to intervene and help provide those role models. And that's a program that I'm working on with John Choi. We have ambassadors and interveners that are going to work with these families.
Representative Lucero, before I give you the chance for a follow-up, I just want to note, we do have a bunch of bills on the agenda and that, talking about was a very important issue with the causes. I think we need to keep focused though on what's in the bill, and whether it's a good use of money rather than, I understand your question, I allowed it, but I'd ask in the interest of time if you could stay focused on provisions that are in the bill and we can have a discussion about other things, causes and other things at a different time.
Do I have the floor now?
Yeah, Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the indulgence. Then my next question would be for the bill author. My understanding is that the bill is targeting catalytic converters. And in the interest of time, I was going to ask if he didn't testify, but Mr. Esteson, if...
That's the next bill, Representative Lucero. This bill is not about catalytic converters.
Oh, it's not. Okay. Well, then I will yield at this time.
Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, closing comments, Representative Katisa Batum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, as the example I shared earlier shows, collaboration between city and county police departments is more critical than ever, with stolen vehicles being used in other crimes and surrounding communities. Not only do we need to enhance recruiting and officer training programs, but also utilize and fund this important department and program. In collaboration with other suburban legislators and law enforcement, we are working to find creative solutions to enhance a statewide cross-jurisdictional approach to addressing and reversing the trend of rising crime. House File 4205 is supported by law enforcement, the Department of Commerce, the National Insurance Crime Bureau. It has bipartisan support in the other body, and it hopefully will be supported by all of you. I appreciate the consideration, Mr. Chair, and I will renew my motion that House File 4205 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Committee on the Bus Bill.
Representative Katisa Batum renews her motion that House File 4205 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Bill. The bill is laid over. Thank you, Representative Katisa Batum. Our next bill is House File 2603 from Representative Richardson. Representative Richardson, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, please. I'd like to move House File 2603 be laid over for possible inclusion, Mr. Chair.
Representative Richardson moves House File 2603 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill, and I understand you have an author's amendment, the DE4.
That is correct. Mr. Chair, would you like to vote on that now and have me explain the bill as amended?
Since it's a DE, I think we can do that. This gets the bill in the shape that you'd like to consider it. So I'm assuming you're moving the DE4. Is there any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the DE4 is adopted. Representative Richardson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2603, as amended, is to address catalytic converter theft. Catalytic converter theft continues to increase nationwide and in Minnesota as well. Currently, Minnesota ranks third in the nation and the country with the most catalytic converter thefts, trailing behind only California and Texas. As the value of precious metals contained within the catalytic converters continue to rise, so do the number of thefts of these devices. For example, one of those precious metals, rhodium, is currently valued at more than $18,000 per ounce. We have all heard the news stories of too many families that have been impacted by catalytic converter theft, and it demonstrates that this is a statewide problem and a national issue. This bill hits on several recommendations from the 2021 resolution of the International Association of Auto Theft Investigators, which includes law enforcement personnel, the insurance industry, and other related businesses who share a common goal of combating vehicle theft crimes. The bill requires that to purchase a detached catalytic converter, it must be marked with the VIN number of the car it was removed from or with an alternative numbering system used by law enforcement. It requires scrap metal dealers to have training for their staff and to also track employees who are completing transactions and to retain expanded records for at least 3 years. It also sets forth a 7-day waiting period before processing, selling, or removing a catalytic converter from the dealer's premises. The bill would also expand the catalytic converter theft prevention pilot project to include a pilot on anti-theft devices. And it also would provide the Department of Commerce the authority for audits of records to ensure compliance. The bill would make it unlawful for a person to possess a used detached catalytic converter unless it's marked, certified for use as a replacement part. It would also make it unlawful for a person who is not a scrap metal dealer to purchase a used catalytic converter that is detached, that is not EPA certified. It requires that new and used motor vehicle dealers mark catalytic converters on vehicles prior to sale. We know that this is a complex problem and there are no easy solutions, and it's going to take a community-based response to reduce the high rates of theft that we are seeing within the state. I want to take this moment to thank the various stakeholders who have committed to continued work on this bill. And with that, Mr. Chair, I have a few testifiers that I would like to yield my time to.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. The first testifier is Brian Sturgeon, the Chief of West St. Paul. Chief Sturgeon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Richardson. I appreciate the opportunity to testify in front of you. 3 weeks ago, St. Croix Lutheran High School received some unwanted individuals in their parking lot in the middle of the day, and 4 Cal-Lite converters were stolen within a matter of 2 minutes. I have a single mother working 2 jobs, taking care of her children, living in a 2-bedroom apartment. Her Cal-Lite converter was stolen twice. A teacher at Garlow Elementary School during the day had her Cal-Lite converter stolen. These are just a few stories that I can tell you of the 177 Cal-Lite converters that were stolen in the city of West St. Paul last year. 177, 5 square miles with just over 20,000 population. It is a serious issue within our community. I'm currently working with our city council to pass an ordinance similar to what's being proposed here, but we need to do something statewide. And I am very glad to see this legislation from Representative Richardson come forth. It is something that our community needs to combat this crime that is running rampant. And it's not just certain areas of our town, it's throughout the whole town. So I really appreciate the consideration that this bill to move forward, and I'll stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Sturgeon. Next we have Kurt Hallstrom, a senior commander in St. Paul. Commander Hallstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, and members of the committee. I would echo what Chief Sturgeon testified to. We had over 2,000 catalytic converters reported stolen in the city of St. Paul last year, and that's only what we reported. I have many, many stories of families struggling, you know, without having to replace a several $1,000 catalytic converter. And, you know, to Representative Richardson's point, this is going to take a multifaceted response to this. And the St. Paul Police Department is 100% in support of all of the entities of this bill. And we, you know, last year we participated in several unofficial marking events, and we plan on continuing to do that this year, and this will help us achieve that goal. So 100% in support, and agree with the entities of the bill. So thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Keenan Stafford. Mr. Stafford.
Yes. I recently had my Cadillac converter. Mr. Chair, thank you for having me speak here, and Representative Richardson. I recently had my Cadillac converter stolen, actually this past Sunday. You know, I was home all day. Yes. And, you know, I was going to go run an errand for a friend 11 o'clock at night. And good thing, you know, that happened, because when I turned on my car, it just went, it was just loud. It was loud. And so I just knew my Cadillac converter was stolen. I previously worked in St. Paul schools on the east side, and I know at Hazel Park, a couple of staff members over there had their Cadillac converter stolen, you know, before winter break. And I also heard a story here in my new location at, you know, at the Heights on the east side, that, you know, our assistant principal had her Cadillac converter stolen. So, you know, it's a really hot crime that's going on. People are desperate for time, desperate for money, desperate to get the economy back, but unfortunately they're looking for a crime solution rather than a non-crime solution to get that money and get that wealth. And so you know, I had to file a police report. Luckily I didn't know insurance, you know, covered it. So you know, I asked, you know, my AP if, you know, insurance covered it, and she's like, oh yeah, you know, I know the insurance covers accidents, but I'm glad they'll cover it. I mean, it's going to be a, you know, deductible on my part, $400 to $500 deductible. I'll be able to work out the money. I know other people will not be able to work out the money to pay that deductible. You know, it's a financial setback, you know, for many people who get their Cadillac converter stolen, depending on their income value. Luckily, I make just good enough money to try to navigate that with my bills and what I have to owe. So, and luckily my father would have stepped in and helped me to just, you know, called him up, and he took me to work, and I got his truck. And while I'm dealing with getting that situation handled. So yeah, you know, I'm in support of this bill and whatnot. So I'll take any questions or any comments, concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Stafford, for sharing your story. I'm sorry that happened to you. I know how terrible it is to be a victim of a crime, and I appreciate you sharing your story. And I'm glad that you were able to get some accommodations to get to work and everything else too. Next, we have Jeremy Estenson. Mr. Estenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeremy Estenson with Taft Advisors here representing ISRI, which is the trade association comprised of scrap metal recycling companies around the state of Minnesota. Mr. Stafford, very sorry to hear what happened to you. Unfortunately, the folks who answer the phones at our facilities are hearing it constantly and all the time. Some of my testimony might sound a little bit familiar to committee members because we talked about this some last year. Chair Stevenson, we appreciate the work that you did last year to help us and the other stakeholders come up with money to start serializing catalytic converters, because for those committee members who have not been out to one of our facilities, let me first say that we have an open invitation, but let me next say that they all, within reason, look the same. They look very, very similar. Chair Stevenson was out, and there's a bin of them at this particular facility. And without getting into too many details, it's for a layperson very difficult to tell what catalytic converter came from what vehicle, even within a particular make. Frequently, these things are paired up with a given drivetrain. Probably going into too much detail there already, but the fact is, it's very difficult without some sort of identifier. And the pilot project last year that's currently being rolled out, we think was a great step in the right direction. And let me say to the author, Representative Richardson, you're right. These thefts follow prices. And this isn't our first go round. A decade ago, it was copper in the wake of the Great Recession. Copper was being torn out of buildings. It was being taken from Xcel and other utility providers, and it was trying to be turned into cash. There were criminals out there stealing this stuff from boarded up buildings and so forth, and bringing it where they could to get cash. At that time, Ramsey County Attorney Choi approached our group and the legislature and said, what can we do about this? And in short, what we did was came up with 325E.21. And if you look on the first page and a half of the DE, or the first two pages of the DE, you'll see a list of requirements that didn't exist just over a decade ago. And for instance, if you were to drive into a facility to sell something right now in Minnesota, an HD camera would capture your vehicle, your license plate. It would take a picture of you, your face. There would be a picture of what you brought in. You would sign an affidavit that says it's yours and yours to sell. You'd then be paid with a check or a electronic transfer, not cash, and a variety of other things. Point is, what we did is try to partner with law enforcement and prosecutors to come up with a chain of evidence that didn't used to exist. We understand, having met with law enforcement and doing our best to partner with law enforcement over the years, that may not be enough because they're so shorthanded. They don't have the people to send out to the scrapyards. We wish we saw their faces at the scrapyards more. And in no way to the folks in law enforcement who are watching this do I mean that as any kind of insult. We know you have your hands full. We see it every day. And we want to do our part. What we are trying to do is balance our role as businesses and recyclers with being a de facto extension of law enforcement. What we do at our core is we take end-of-life manufactured goods and put them back into the supply stream in the name of recycling. And yes, we make money at it. It's a wonderful thing. Most of your vehicles now are comprised of far greater than 50% recycled materials. But Mr. Chair and Representative Richardson, I do want to testify strongly in support of Section 5 of the DE, because there is a commonality in all of these things, whether it was copper 10 years ago, whether it was the Dodge Caravans getting taken off the streets and being shredded by criminals at that time, the commonality is criminals. And in Section 5, real penalties are being suggested. And well, obviously that's outside of anything that scrap recyclers have to do with. Criminals are what bring us here. And so whatever we can do, Mr. Chair, Representative Richardson, to advance this conversation around penalizing people who are doing wrong, we'd like to be part of that conversation. I do have some specific concerns with the DE surrounding what we call tag and hold and some other things. Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to go into those, but it's my understanding that this is a bill in progress and there might be some additional conversation. So I'll hold those comments unless you or the committee would like me to go into them.
Thank you, Mr. Estensen. Yeah, the motion is to lay over today. I expect that this bill will be back in the future. The next testifier is Amber Backus. Ms. Backus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Amber Backus, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association and its 375 franchise new car and truck dealers statewide. And we are very appreciative of Representative Richardson for her interest in trying to thwart catalytic converter theft and bringing this bill forward. It's been a huge headache for vehicle owners and dealerships alike. In fact, today I just received an email from a Toyota dealer. They are exasperated because 7 catalytic converters have been removed from vehicles on their lot this week. And with the supply chain issues, replacement parts are hard to come by, inconveniencing everyone involved. Our association has been at the forefront in trying to address the issue. We have an employee participating in the Catalytic Converter Committee of the International Association of Auto Theft Investigators with Mr. Bakke from the Department of Commerce. And we've engaged with the department on a pilot to encourage dealerships to provide catalytic converter marking to their customers. We also helped spearhead a bipartisan bill recently introduced in Congress, the Preventing Auto Recycling Theft, or PART Act. They definitely like their acronyms there, which is co-sponsored by Betty McCollum, and it provides a federal framework for addressing the issue. We are very grateful that this House file adds another important piece to the puzzle, as Mr. Estensen mentioned, strengthening criminal penalties for individuals in possession of multiple catalytic converters. We've heard stories too often from our friends in law enforcement about stopping someone with a car full of converters, but because the catalytic converters are unmarked and no one witnessed how they are acquired, there's no ability to charge the individual with the crime. The enhanced penalties in the bill for possession will go a long way to discourage catalytic converter theft. But that being said, we do have considerable concerns over the new language in Section 9 of the Delete All, which requires all dealers to mark the catalytic converters of all new and used vehicles in their inventory. This is an extremely expensive and in some instances impractical undertaking. On average, 1 million new and used cars are bought through Minnesota dealers annually. Between parts and labor, it costs approximately $100 to put an etching label on a catalytic converter that is easily accessed. That's an uncompensated cost of $100 million to Minnesota's dealers. A staggering amount, but extremely conservative when you consider there are many models of vehicles where the catalytic converter is not easily accessed. It's located behind underbody panels and other parts. It could cost a couple of $1,000s to reach the catalytic converter, and to what end? Catalytic converter theft is a crime of convenience. Those hard-to-reach catalytic converters are not being stolen. It's the models with high clearance and exposed catalytic converters that are targets of the criminals. To avoid having to disassemble a new vehicle, we prefer to have the manufacturers mark the catalytic converters during assembly, like they do with about 10 other parts. The Federal PART Act I previously referenced will require manufacturers to mark the catalytic converters during production, which would be great. We do look forward to working with Representative Richardson on language to encourage marking to deter theft, but doing so in a way that's targeted and cost-effective. And so we're grateful for the time today, and again, look forward to continuing the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Backus. This concludes public testimony. We'll now move to member discussions and questions. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I appreciate you catching me in that last bill, but in my confusion between the two bills. So my first question is for the bill author. I actually have two questions. The first one is I'm looking at the line starting at 4.27. Regarding an alternative number system. So there's a requirement that it be marked or engraved, and it be marked or engraved with the VIN of the vehicle or with an alternative number system. And my question for the bill author what is the intent or who would control this alternative number system? Would it be a single system that's used by the entire new and used car industry and the recycled dealer, scrap dealer industry, or would this be multiple alternative numbering systems?
Chair Richardson, if you want to answer that, I also know this kind of gets into what's been going on with the pilot, and so we might have someone from the Department of Commerce available, but I'll, Chair Richardson, of course, if you want to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lucero, for your question. In terms of looking at the alternative number, the intent would really be that that would be working in with law enforcement to ensure that there's actually a way to immediately trace a vehicle. But I will defer to, I think Mr. Bakke is on the call, and he may be able to give a little bit more detail around the pilot related to the marking.
Yeah, Mr. Bakke, I see his camera's on. So Mr. Bakke.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Richardson. The intent of the alternative marking system would be the twofold. One would be the CatGuard labels that have been on the news, and the Department of Commerce is processing through the marking pilot project. When you run that number, law enforcement can run it on the computer in their squad car, and it immediately gives the VIN number that would belong to. The other alternative is that an alternative numbering system, many of the scrap yards, it's my understanding, when they receive vehicles in and they dismantle them, they have a sheet of labels with inventory parts, and they mark their inventory as they disassemble the car. So the catalytic converter would be yet one of the other parts that they would mark so that if law enforcement were doing an inspection, they could see what car it originally came from.
And Mr. Bakke, before I go back to Representative Lucero for a follow-up, in the pilot program, you have these stickers that then etch, the solution is applied that etches it onto the catalytic converter. Can you, and you've been purchasing those with funds that we appropriated last year, can you tell us how much those stickers cost?
Part of it is we have several different aspects of it. A consumer can buy a self-service packet for around $25. We just purchased, I think it's around $160,000 worth for 16,000 labels, I believe. I'm going from memory, so I don't have the numbers offhand here.
And I think I didn't mean to put you on the spot, and I don't know if Mr. Kelly wants to chime in here, because I know that he's also been involved with this, and I see he's on. But Mr. Kelly, if you have an answer for how much those stickers have cost the department.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, John Kelly, Director of Government Affairs for the Commerce Department. We did a pilot within the pilot to make sure that this works. The labels that were done in the marking event that was on Fox 9 are different from the labels that we'll be using going forward that are individual labels. But the labels that we have, that we just received 8,000 of them this week, are $10 a pop.
Okay. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll be as quick as I can. We've got two more questions, one more for the bill author and the one for Mr. Esteson for that I attempted in the last bill. So my second question for the bill author is, I've been remodeling homes for over a decade, and over this course of a decade, my pile of various metals that I've been pulling out of homes and my remodels has been building. I recently went to a scrapyard just in the fall here to finally offload them, and I had four types of metals. I had aluminum, copper, lead, and iron, and these were metals that were twisted, turned, you know, pulled out, smashed. You wouldn't know where this stuff came from. So if your bill were to become law and we have an engraving system, whether it be the VIN or an alternative, what would happen or what would prevent a person from taking a catalytic converter, removing the precious metals so you no longer have them in a catalytic converter form, and then simply went to a scrapyard or across a state boundary or something to that effect? How would this bill help in such a scenario?
Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lucero, for your question. You know, I think you're getting to the heart of the matter when we talk about the complexity around trying to really put a dent in catalytic converter theft. This is just one way. And so it's not designed to do everything within this one bill. But I think where we really see that the most significant efforts can be made in this space really relate to giving law enforcement a way to support when they're pulling someone over and they've got a car full of catalytic converters that have been cut off. This creates a way for them to be able to fully investigate that. And also the marking piece is another really important piece that has been identified, you know, internationally as a result of that resolution. And so I would just say that a number of the 6-point recommendations that came from the international resolution are within this bill. Doesn't have every single possible scenario that might be relate to catalytic converter theft.
Any last follow-up, Representative Lucero?
Thank you. And just one more quick question for Mr. Estenson. Mr. Estenson, you had said you have many more remarks, and I don't, just for sake of time, I don't want to get into anything really lengthy, but because you are representing the scrap metal recycler industry, and because obviously there are those in that industry in multiple states, and because here in the Twin Cities, we're obviously in close proximity to Wisconsin, can you speak to how this, if this bill were to become law in Minnesota, how would this work across state lines, for example?
Mr. Estenson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lucero, there is no simple answer. But when enough anecdotes start to look the same, we probably have learned something. So I'm going to speak to that. There are digital tracking systems that track certain types of scrap that move across state lines. Most of those systems are voluntary and maintained by the scrap association that you voluntarily join, pay dues to, subscribe to, and so forth. Law enforcement can then use those things for free. In this case, what we know is that the stories sound a lot like this when catalytic converters get stolen. There are groups of generally young men out sawing catalytic converters off vehicles. They generally then meet in a big box parking lot or some location. In fact, if you were to go on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace right now and type in catalytic converter, you'd more than likely find the phone number of someone who'd be willing to meet you in a parking lot and pay you cash. Those people then collect X number and they go to a jurisdiction that does not have the same regulations that you can see on the first and second page of the DE. Because let's face it, these folks aren't dumb. They're not gonna drive into a place with HD cameras and be captured, their face, sign an affidavit and all these other sorts of things. So I can't answer specifically what's gonna happen, but I can tell you right now that many, I can't say most, I can't quantify it, but many of the catalytic converters being stolen right now are leaving Minnesota to go to sometimes many states away that have looser regulations.
Thank you, Mr. Estenson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, closing comments, Chair Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to present the bill. I also like to thank my testifiers today for coming in and talking into and support of the bill. We know that we have a lot to do to address this rising crisis within the state, and I see this as just one additional step that can be taken. I think we're going to be talking about catalytic converter theft for quite a while, and agree that there is definitely a need at the federal level as well to ensure that we have more uniform that can help to support this. But just thank you for the time today, Mr. Chair, and looking forward to continue work with stakeholders on the bill.
Thank you, Chair Richardson. And with that, we will lay over House File 26. Yes, 2603. The next item on our agenda is House File 3784. Representative O'Driscoll, would you like to move your bill? Oh, we have Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, we do. Are we ready?
Go ahead.
Okay, I will move. We want to move this to the General Register, I do believe, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I move House File 3784 before the committee, and I do have a DE2 amendment, and I'm happy to explain that DE amendment as well.
Representative Driscoll moves 3784 be placed on the general register. Representative Driscoll has the DE2 amendment. Yes, if you could describe the amendment.
All right, Mr. Chair and members, the DE2 amendment basically covers a couple of items for the appraisal industry here in the state of Minnesota. Number one, it allows for a provision that changes what we call minimal damage appraisals, and it has to do with eminent domain. It allows appraisers to be able to do acquisitions, or should say not the appraisers themselves do the acquisition, but allows appraisers to do reports for acquisition purposes. And when the anticipated value is less than $25,000 in damages that would be paid in that eminent domain proceeding, we would not require that to be a full-blown appraisal report under the USPAP regulations. Number two provision in the bill is it allows for continuing education that may have been taken in another state by an appraiser to be given credit for their Minnesota licensure. Very important provision because in the appraisal industry, there are many specializations. And if you are in eminent domain acquisition work or other kinds of government-related right-of-way acquisition, this can get very, very, very specialized very quickly. And courses may not be offered within the state of Minnesota for these practitioners. They may be able to take these in other states. Unfortunately, the provider who sponsors that education may not know that they're going to have a Minnesota appraiser in the class. And so they weren't able to get that class pre-approved for education. This allows for a post attendance of the class process for education. And I want to thank the Commerce Department and the appraisers for working to an end to find a way to be able to deal with that. Just a side note, one of the largest acquisitions, people engage in valuation of properties for acquisition by eminent domain and right-of-way is the state of Minnesota. So I believe that MnDOT and others will be pleased with this as well. And the final provision is there's a clarification on some language that we did last year in the bill with respect to valuation bias. It's simply an oversight, and we now have an effective date when appraisers have to begin to take that training. And Mr. Chair, the other provisions that were in the bill are no longer in the bill, and this is the provisions, and that is the PE, and that is my setup. I do believe we will have someone from the Department of Commerce speaking to this, and I believe if his plane has not yet taken off from Washington, we will be having Byron Miller speaking on behalf of the appraisers. He had to attend AQB board, an appraisal quality board meeting in Washington, and he may be en route right now back to Minnesota and not being able to testify. But as we go to the Commerce Department, I will try to locate Mr. Miller to see if he is available to testify. And if not, then that will conclude my presenters today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
First, I think we'll adopt your amendment. Any discussion to the DE2 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the DE2 amendment is adopted. And now, Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, for the record, my name is John Kelly. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Commerce. I want to extend a thanks from the department to Representative O'Driscoll and the North Star Chapter of the Appraisal Institute for the collaboration on this bill. The Commerce Department supports the passage of this bill as amended. Section 2 of the bill represents an agreement crafted by the department and the appraisers. This has been an issue that we've been working on for several years. It is narrowly crafted for appraiser licensees only, and it is a process that the department feels like we can successfully implement. This will allow appraisers who need to take specialized training outside of Minnesota get continuing education credit for those courses. Commerce is also very appreciative of the technical amendment in Section 3, which improves the department's ability to administer that requirement that was passed last session. So thanks again for achieving that elusive peace in the valley, and we are available if there are questions to the bill.
Always happy to find it. Thank you, Mr. Kelly. Any luck, Representative Driscoll, with Mr. Miller? I don't see him on the Zoom.
Mr. Chair, pardon my delay in getting back to you. I just hung up the phone. I was not able to make contact with Mr. Miller either, but I did want to give him the opportunity to testify today. He probably is en route back to Minnesota. So
Well, we wish him safe travels. Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, any closing comments, Representative O'Driscoll?
Members, I renew my motion that House File 3784 as amended be referred to the General Register.
All right. The motion is renewed to place House File 3784 in the General Register. Mr. Dockendorf will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Vice Chair Cotiza Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, aye.
O'Driscoll, aye. Representative Barr.
Barr, aye.
Barr, aye. Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Daphne.
Daphne, aye.
Daphne, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Haley, aye.
Haley, aye. Representative Kegel.
Kegel, aye.
Kegel, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representative Lilly. Is excused. Representative Listlegard is excused as well. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, yes.
Lucero, aye. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr.
Farr, aye.
Farr, aye. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Richardson.
Aye.
Richardson, aye. And Representative Tice.
Tice, aye.
Tice, aye.
Being 16 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 3784, as amended, is recommended to be placed on the General Register. Our last bill on our agenda today is House File 4430. Welcome to the committee, Chair Schultz. I will move House File 4430 be recommended to be referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Chair Schultz, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson and members, for hearing this bill. House File 4430 is the Healthcare Affordability Board, so I worked on this language with Randy Chun, and I want to thank him for all of his work as a nonpartisan research staff in Health and Human Services. And what this bill does, it creates a board to evaluate the growth in healthcare costs over time. And it creates a board, it creates an advisory group to use information from the All Payer Claims Database to evaluate our cost growth, and then to create benchmarks or targets and set those targets by the board with experts from the advisory council providing input. And if providers come above this benchmark target, which will be set by the board, they will have to submit an improvement plan to evaluate why their costs rose so high compared to their peers and work on trying to address that high cost growth rate for their healthcare expenses. This is model legislation that 9 other states have, and other states are introducing bills very similar. I drafted it with Randy Chun and used those states' language, like the state of Massachusetts and others, to make it fit with what we do in Minnesota. So it's a very good bill. Other states are doing it. In Massachusetts, they saved, since 2012, they saved $9 billion. From 2012 to 2019, $9.3 billion in savings or avoided spending by having these boards evaluate costs and work with providers and addressing those high costs. So it's a bill that actually does get at addressing the high costs of care and something that I think will have bipartisan support in Minnesota. So thank you for hearing the bill, and I believe there may be a testifier.
We do have Kenza Hajmusa, Ms. Hajmusa, sorry.
It's okay, thank you, Chair Stevenson and members. My name is Kenza Hajmusa. I'm the Public Affairs Director at Take Action Minnesota. We're a statewide multiracial member organization, and we strongly support House File 4430, creating a health affordability board. Take Action members have worked on healthcare issues for 15 years. We support the creation of a health affordability board because we believe in a people-centered healthcare system that supports our health, and we believe our government is responsible for making healthcare work for everyone. Every year, we hear from members struggling to afford their health insurance, prescription drugs, and medical bills. According to a Healthcare Value Hub poll, 27% of Minnesotans struggled to afford healthcare costs last year. We support the board's proactive approach to addressing rising healthcare and prescription drug costs through its ability to set healthcare spending and growth targets. Given our state's health disparities, we also support the board's duty to establish goals to reduce racial healthcare disparities and to ensure quality care for people with disabilities, chronic, or complex health conditions. As a state, we have long identified the need to address health disparities, but have done little to move the needle. We also want to lift up the need for the Office of Patient Protection. While we support Mental Health Parity and Substance Abuse Accountability Office included in the reinsurance bill, we also support a broader patient protection office. Minnesotans going up against industries that raise costs with impunity, create barriers to care, and can deny life-saving healthcare services and prescription drugs need a level playing field. The Health Affordability Board is the right step forward. We urge you to vote yes. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes public testimony, so we'll move to member discussion and questions. Discussion to the bill. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to ask a quick question to the bill author. There are many questions that I could ask and probably save them from the House floor if this makes it there, but I'll just stick with one for now. So on line 2.6, in regards to the makeup of the board, all appointed members must have knowledge and demonstrated expertise, and then dropping down to the last line, in and among that list would be structural inequities. Could the bill author just explain and help provide clarity? How does one have demonstrated expertise in structural inequities?
Chair Schultz.
I think there are many experts in Minnesota and across the country that have experience doing research on looking at inequities that are could be structural and can help inform the board and educate the board on their research in this area and make sure that, I know right now, for instance, that health plans are working a lot on equity issues. And when I meet with the health plans, they often tell me what programs they're working on to address inequities in healthcare outcomes and healthcare access. And I think this is the intent of having someone with that expertise on the board.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to follow up then, okay, so 13 members, 5 from the governor, 2, okay, so they don't necessarily get the follow-up question is the members that are appointed by the governor, the majority leader, the minority, the Senate, and the House, respectively. Is there a requirement that they are members, let's say the legislative branch, do they have to be a member of the legislative branch, the House, Senate, or could it be anybody just appointed by the majority of minority leaders?
The latter, Representative Lucero.
Okay, thank you for the clarity.
Mm-hmm. Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing none, Chair Schultz, closing comments?
I would encourage folks to visit the Milbank Memorial Fund. They're really been engaged in creating this legislation and working closely with states. And I've been fortunate to be a Milbank fellow this year. And I've been working with legislators from various states on healthcare reform. It's been very educational. And I think they're excited that many states are introducing legislation that they're supporting. And I encourage members to look at the committee documents to read about these activities going on in other states and the success other states have had controlling the growth in their healthcare costs.
Thank you, Chair Schultz. I will renew my motion that House File 4430 be recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee, and Mr. Dockendorf will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Stevenson, aye. Vice Chair Cotiza-Watoon.
Aye.
Cotiza-Watoon, aye. Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, no.
Representative Barr.
Barr, no.
Barr, no. Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Carlson, aye. Representative Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Dabney, aye. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Elkins, aye. Representative Haley.
Haley, no.
Haley, no. Representative Cagle.
Cagle, aye.
Cagle, aye. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Lee, aye. Representatives Lilly and Lislegard are excused. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, no.
Lucero, no. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Olson, aye. Representative Farr.
Farr, no.
Farr, no. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, no.
Rasmussen, no. Representative Richardson.
Richardson, aye.
Richardson, aye. And Representative Tice.
Tice, no.
Tice, no.
With 9 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 4430 is recommended to be re-referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you, Chair Schultz. And with that, we have concluded our agenda for today, and we are adjourned.